Hello, this is Making Connections. I'm Barb Seaman. It's that time again, when each state gets information from the U.S. Census and draws new voting districts. Now, the subject of redistricting might seem too wonky to pay attention to, and it is a bit complicated and confusing, but the issue really will affect the outcome of our elections for the next 10 years. So it seemed like a good idea to dig in and learn about it. I found someone who knows quite a bit. Here's Alan Younell.
I grew up as an engineer, and one of the things I was trained to do was open my eyes and ears to everybody's voice. Because when you have a lot of voices working on the problem, you get a better solution. And that's really what we're after.
Alan belongs to the League of Women Voters. He realized how important redistricting is when he saw a movie called Slay the Dragon.
You win state legislatures in 2010, you get to draw the new maps that control all the elections over the next decade.
The winner is pre-decided just by the way that the districts are drawn.
And it is about how Wisconsin, I think it was Wisconsin, was redistricted. And one young woman, I think she was in her late 20s, was offended by this and started filing lawsuits and said, what you did was not fair. You're locking in political parties that are not representing people who want to have a voice. We essentially will never have a voice with a map like this.
This may be the last time we have an opportunity to do something about partisan gerrymandering.
The people of our country are sick of this, and if we don't come and say that enough is enough, then nothing's going to change.
And this is an area where we all have a right to have our voice heard, and to have competitive districts is really the most important thing. Because when they're competitive districts, people's voices are heard. When you lock in the districts for political advantage, then you really do shut out a large minority of the people get shut out. And it's that's not the way to get the best solutions to problems.
So this is such a tricky subject to describe. And
let me give you an example from Washington State, a relevant example.
Okay.
I think Washington became a state in about 1898.
Mm-hmm.
The Constitution in Washington said we should have districts according to population.
Okay.
That's not very much guidance. And so they added local state representatives, not congressional. They added them regularly as the population grew. They did not have a very clear policy how to do it. And by the time they got to the mid-1950s, the districts had been drawn according to geographical boundaries,
mm-hmm,
and were no longer really representative. I'll give you an example. One district that included Columbia had about 20,000 people. But another district that included Seattle had over 150,000 people.
Hmm.
So you can see the people in Seattle were kind of getting short shrift in, mm-hmm, the legislature. That's actually an area where the League of Women Voters put legislative initiatives forward to change the process. And they've been involved from the 50s in doing this.
So now there's more of a focus on trying to keep it equal, which means that you have a big concentrated area like Seattle. I would imagine that would have to have more districts that are smaller geographically than, say, like the central Washington area where everybody's all spread out. Does that make sense?
It does. That's exactly correct. But I got to tell you, this is not from the distant past. This comes from a U.S. Supreme Court decision in 1962.
Hmm.
So this is fairly recent, because remember, this is a once every 10-year
sure
process we go,
yeah,
through.
Okay.
But Washington, Washington has struggled with ways to come up with redistricting. In the mid-60s, Mary Ellen McCaffrey, who was a state legislator, and Slade Gordon, those two representatives were selected by the legislature to put a group of people together, a committee together, to figure out the maps. And this is already in the mid-60s. The census was done in 1960, so they're late already. They did it, And actually, the reason Mary Ellen McCaffrey's important is she had been a past president of the state League of Women Voters and had been very much interested in this. But when they were finished, they did not have a process in place for how to do the 1970 election. In 1970, they again had a similar problem. The state threw up their hands and they hired a geography professor from the University of Washington. They said, "Your geography, you know maps, draw the maps." And he did. But that's still not a process. By 1980, 10 years pass again. Again, they're in a quandary. They don't know what to do. Someone has the idea. Let's appoint two Democrats. Let's appoint two Republicans. And they can choose somebody to facilitate their meetings. And let's see if they can make a map. And in 90 days, they did. And they, the next year after that, they put that into law. And that's the commission that we have today in the state of Washington, which is how we do it.
Do you think you could give me a, like, just a brief rundown on how districts are made and why?
Sure. We have a system of government where we do not all vote on everything. So the way redistricting works is that districts are created to represent equal amounts of population and that a representative is elected from that district. So pretty much representatives all represent this about the same number of people. The way it works is slightly different at the state and at the federal level. At the federal level, the census measures changes to the U.S. population that have occurred over the last 10 years. To determine how many representatives, congressional representatives, a state has, we take that total population and divide it by 435, because by law, that's the number of representatives the United States has. That gives us the approximate number of, it gives us the number of representatives in every district. And it's about a little over 700,000.
Okay, so just to be clear, I'm understanding this. So since there's 435 representatives in the House of Representatives, they just divide the whole population by 435. And then, so say if some state has a bunch of people moved out in the last 10 years and another state has more, then that way they're making sure that each state has the correct number of representatives. Is that right?
Exactly so. That has a name. That's called reapportionment.
Okay.
And it does happen. In Washington, we have 10 representatives. We don't expect to gain or lose any this year, but other states gain and lose all the time, and it is a common thing.
Okay.
I think Florida may be planning on gaining this year. Then to determine, once you know how many representatives a state is going to get, it's up to the state to figure out what the districts are, what are the boundaries for those districts. And they do the same thing for their state representatives and their state senators. They create districts for each of them, also of approximately the same size. For congressional districts, there are five states for which there's no decision necessary because they only have one representative. They're so small. Alaska is one of those. They have about 700,000 people. So there are five of those. One state has a political commission. Seven have independent commissions. Washington is one of those. And 37 states, the state legislature draws the maps.
So when it comes time to redraw the district boundaries, you're telling me that in some states, it's the people who've already been elected are the people who are deciding what the boundaries are. Is that what you're telling me?
Yes, ma'am. It is much akin to the fox guarding the hen house. Let me give you, I actually have an example here. In 2012, in Pennsylvania, Democratic candidates for the House of Representatives. So if you take all the districts, the congressional districts in Pennsylvania, and add up all the Democratic votes, the votes for Democratic candidates, and all the votes for Republican candidates. The Democratic candidates got 83,000 more votes than the Republican candidates. Mm-hmm. And yet, the Republicans won 13 of the districts, and the Democrats only won 5.
And how does redrawing the map benefit a Republican or a Democrat?
It's easy. In some states, Democratic candidates, Democratic voters are packed in to particularly dense areas where you have a lot of them, like in major cities is typically what you see, mm-hmm. whereas Republicans are typically in the rural areas. Mm-hmm. If you redistrict for political advantage, mm-hmm. you can redistrict in such a way when you pack one particular political or ethnic group into one area, that's called packing, and you give them an advantage in that district, but their strength and voice in other districts is not heard. Another technique in redistricting is called cracking, where you draw boundary lines in such a way that you break up what would be a voting block into several districts, so it has no majority in any of those districts, and so their voices are completely unheard. There have been also situations where particular legislators have been removed from districts by changing the district boundary to not include their house.
So tell me about that.
So it was actually one of my father's childhood friends, Abner Mikva, who was a representative in Congress on the south side of Chicago. Redistricting occurred, and his house was not included in his district. And he was not going to win in the district he was in. So actually, he and his family moved up to Evanston, and he ran for Congress and won up there.
Okay, but just to make sure I understand,
it does happen.
So this was a situation where the man was a representative, and uh-huh. he had been elected, and then when the time came to redraw the boundaries, they redrew the district so that he didn't even live anymore in the district that he was representing.
That's correct. And the reason they wanted him out was he was a gun control advocate, and they didn't want that voice in Congress.
And
anyway,
when did that happen? How long ago was that?
That had to be in the 60s, in the early 60s, I think.
Okay. Could you tell me where the name gerrymandering comes from? What was the original source of that term?
I can. In 1812, there was a governor of Massachusetts who actually did not favor political redistricting, but his name was Elbridge Gerry, G-E-R-R-Y, and he signed into law the redistricting of the state of Massachusetts, and it included a district that kind of looked like a salamander around the city of Boston, including Boston, and that redistricting locked in a Senate seat. It made secure a Senate seat for the Democratic-Republican Party. And as a result, a newspaper columnist or a cartoonist labeled it gerrymandering. And of course, we've slightly changed it to gerrymander.
Okay.
That's where it comes from.
And so this was back in the 1800s, you said?
1812.
Okay. And why did he redraw those districts? Is it because it favored him? It helped him to get reelected?
He didn't do it, but his party did.
Okay.
In the legislature, his party in the legislature did. They did it to lock in a Senate seat to be the Democratic Republican. That was the name of the political party.
Mm-hmm.
Democratic Republican.
Okay. And so what they're doing is they're figuring out who's most likely to vote for their candidate, and they're drawing the boundaries in such a way that will help to put enough voters in that district that will pick that candidate.
Keep them in office. Mm-hmm. And let me point something out to you. It is far easier to do that today using all of the data that's available by people's internet access. So when they talk about big data analysis, you can pretty much figure out how many people you have in a district that are Democratic or Republican or other party. It's fairly simple.
Okay, we're going to take a quick break to thank our sponsors. This is KXRW, community-supported radio in Vancouver.
Community radio like this is brought to you by the generous support by our founding sponsors at ADCO Commercial Printing and Graphics, Clark County's local print shop since 1993. ADCO features stationery, posters, flyers, tickets, business cards, stickers, catalogs, and much more. Print on anything and mail anywhere. Learn more at adco1.com. That's ADCO1.com.
Big thank you to Craft Cannabis, formerly known as New Vansterdam, for their ongoing support of KXRW Vancouver Radio. Craft Cannabis is Vancouver's premier cannabis market for those 21 years of age and over. Visit craftcannabis.com to view an order from their full online menu, and they offer in-store, curbside, and touchless pickup to better serve you. Craft Cannabis is located in the Heights Shopping Center on the corner of Mill Plain and Andreessen Road. Open 8 a.m. to 11 p.m., 365 days a year. More information available at craftcannabis.com.
Thanks for staying with us. Before we get back to our discussion, I just want to put out this reminder that domestic violence is not okay, and it's on the rise, especially now during this time of COVID-19. Domestic violence can be physical abuse, verbal, financial, sexual, stalking, or technological. If you or someone you know is in an abusive relationship, the Vancouver Police Department and the YWCA are here for you. You're not alone, even in this time of crisis. You can call the YWCA at 360-695-0501 or call 911 for police. You can also find helpful information about the Safe Choice Domestic Violence Program at ywcaclarkcounty.org and in Portland at ywcapdx.org. So this is Making Connections on KXRW Vancouver. I'm Barb Seaman, speaking with Alan Yunell, who's with the League of Women Voters. Alan is schooling me on the importance of drawing new political districts and how it works. I wonder if you can talk about, is this technique, when it's used by incumbents who are actually in charge of the redistricting and they're sort of looking out for their best interests to try to get themselves reelected, how does this affect the marginalized communities or the communities of color? I guess what I'm asking is there any certain group of people who it affects worse than others?
It has characteristically affected Latin communities, as I mentioned, up in Yakima. I think that there may also be an issue with some of the Native American communities. I know that in the South, in the United States, it has affected Black and other minority communities. In Chicago, it was an effect on Latin communities, and there were different remedies. Sometimes majority-minority districts were created to give minorities a voice. Other times they were broken apart. From Reconstruction after the Civil War until the mid-1960s, it was an effective technique to keep Black voters in the southern United States from having an effective voice, which was the reason for one of the effects of the Voting Rights Act. Washington State has very firm rules on what the Redistricting Commission is to take into account. Let me read these to you.
Okay.
They are to maintain equal population in their districts. Districts should be compact, contiguous, so connected, and convenient. They should minimize the splitting of political boundaries. Now, that's not political party boundaries. That's like counties and townships and cities. Try not to cut them apart.
Okay.
They should try to preserve communities of interest, and they should not have undue favoritism for any party or group, and it should effectively have fair and effective representation and encourage electoral competition. So those are lofty goals.
Yeah.
And most states have such rules. The problem is that in 37 of the states, they have the legislators drawing boundaries. And, I don't want to cast aspersions, but it would be easy to guess that in their minds, they're thinking, how do I keep my job?
Mm-hmm.
And drawing a boundary that favors one particular party helps keep your job. That's why an independent commission is so important. In Washington, the Democrats in the House and in the Senate, and the Republicans in the House and the Senate, each get to appoint one person. So we're really tied to Democrats and Republicans doing this. Other states have had similar problems, like California. And in California, they came up with a scheme where, yes, they can have Democrats and Republicans, but they have many more independent citizens on the commission. And so you get more voices that way, because there's more that goes on than just Democrats and Republican politics. There's a lot of interest on where does industry go and who has access to things, and does a particular ethnic or social group get a voice, or are they broken up and they don't get a common voice? So these are important questions. Let me add, there is another technique to help solve this problem. It's called rank choice voting. And you may not have heard that before, but what it is to make the districts bigger. Say instead of just having one representative, you might have three representatives. So geographically, physically bigger and larger population. And people vote instead of, I'm voting for candidate A only. You would rank the people you're voting for. I'm voting for, my first choice is candidate one, my second choice is candidate two, and my third choice is candidate three. And you might have 8 or 10 people running. And using ranked choice voting, picking the ones that win are the ones that have the largest number of votes. It's an easy way to say it. Mm-hmm. It gets a little more complicated, but not much. That technique gives more voices. You could have more than just Democratic and Republican voices. You could have easily environmental voices in the mix or ethnic voices in the mix, because from your area, you're voting for different candidates, the ones you like. It also tends to make the political, the election process a little less cantankerous, because you, as candidates get winnowed out, you don't know who you're going to be running with. So it's, I would point out that this is a common technique, not so much in the United States, but in other countries, they use this for electing officials.
Yeah, that's really interesting. I've heard people describe ranked choice voting in the past, but never from the perspective of districting. And, you know, it was always a matter of, well, if from the perspective of the primaries. And so I this is an interesting idea. If we had, say, like, you know, the state of Washington cut up into just three giant chunks, and then you're voting for three representatives for each chunk, then I can imagine that the process would just be much more, I guess what I'm saying is it would be much less nasty and more based on the issues and the substance.
You are correct. You are correct. That's exactly what tends to happen. I will point out that last year in the legislature, the state of Washington enacted legislation that allows localities, so towns and counties and cities, to experiment with ranked choice voting for their own local elections. So it's a new thing. It's come to Washington. It is not approved yet for the election of state officials or state representatives or federal elections, but mm-hmm. Washington has the opportunity. Local districts can experiment with this on their own if they're interested.
Oh, that's so interesting. Do you know of any other states in the country that are operating for the federal offices using ranked choice voting?
I can't say with certainty, but mm-hmm. I have heard that one state in the East has experimented mm-hmm. with this. I
okay.
don't know at what level, though. I will point out one other thing, is that the League of Women Voters tried last year to get a larger independent commission passed in the state of Washington, similar to what California has. It did not pass. They will be putting it forward again this year in the legislature to try and get that passed.
And the advantage of having a larger commission is?
Independence. Apolitical, not political appointees, citizen appointees, and you get more voices. It is more voices make a better solution.
That's nice. I like what you just said there.
It is. I'm telling you, diversity, honest to God, it matters. There's stuff that one person hasn't thought of that someone else has, and it's important to hear it so that you make a best solution. Anyway.
No, I like that. I'm hearing the passion and emotion in your statements, and it's, you know, it makes me think of how so many people have been so down on government for so many years. You know, government is terrible. We don't need government, and why should I bother voting? And it feels like this subject that you're talking about here is just directly connected to that.
Well, government is us, and. You can't, it's important not to abdicate your responsibility, because we have the ability to make things so much better, but we have to pay attention to it. And if we pay attention, we can make things a lot better for all kinds of problems. So yes, I think it's important to do.
Thank you so much, Alan Unell from the League of Women Voters. I really appreciate you taking the time to help try to shed some light on this complicated subject.
Thank you, Barbara. It's been my pleasure.
There's one more thing we want listeners to know about. The state of Washington takes public input as part of the redistricting process, and the League of Women Voters has resources available to help you speak up. They plan to hold workshops in March to help you prepare your testimony. Go to their website at lwvclarkcounty.org to find out more. This is Making Connections on KXRW Vancouver. You can find out more about our listener-supported, volunteer-run radio station by going to kxrw.fm. I'm Barb Seaman. Thanks for taking the time to listen in.